Welcome to the Female Dating Strategy Podcast, the meanest female-only podcast on the internet. I'm your host, Savannah, and I am without Ro this week, but I am joined by a very, very special guest. So I'm not sure if you all remember, but last year, Ro and I put out a call for new podcast hosts because we felt that it was time for the podcast to get a bit of a fresh perspective. I mean, we've been doing this now for, is it almost 4 years now? Is it 2020? We've launched, my gosh, yeah. So we were both starting to feel like broken records. And we had a tremendous amount of applications from some seriously badass women who I think will be a great addition to the pod. But we are starting with our first guest host today, and I will be joined by Cassandra. Welcome to the pod, Cassandra. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get into Cassandra's episode, which I really, really, really liked when I was looking at all the applications, Cassandra, do you just want to tell us a bit about your FDS journey? So what brought you to FDS and, you know, why you applied to be one of the hosts?
Well, a few years ago, I can't remember exactly what sort of nonsense was going on, but there was definitely some nonsense involving a man, and I texted one of my best friends, and instead of commiserating with me, she simply typed back, "Female dating strategy Reddit." And so, of course, I looked it up, and, you know, it was so mind-blowing that all these things that I'd suspected over the years and ways that I felt like I was being lied to were confirmed, and there was a new vocabulary to discuss these things and tools to use, and it was just the start of so many good things and being able to respond differently and be able to have, you know, the vocabulary to talk about things properly. And, you know, so when the opportunity came to participate on a deeper level and in a way that would deepen my understanding and my use of the tools, I couldn't help but throw my head in the ring.
I want to say that's a typical origin story for most people from FDS, but I do have to say that your friend who introduced you is absolutely based.
They are one of the best people I know.
Queen.
And we have been through a lot together.
Queen, I love it. Does she still peruse FDS stuff? I know FDS hasn't been as active on social media recently.
I mean, we've both been on such a journey together, you know, from, you know, back in the day, like me escorting her into the courthouse to get a restraining order to,
oh gosh,
she's been happily married for several years now. So I don't think she has the same need for it as previously, but I think she still keeps her hand in it, so to speak.
Nice. So thank you for telling us about your origin story, FDS origin story. I'm always keen to hear about those. So on to the main meat of the episode, so to speak. So what will we be discussing today, Cassandra?
Anti-heroes and villainesses, what we can learn from them and what Hollywood is afraid of. And this is actually something that has bothered me for a really, really long time. And it's one of the things that FDS has helped given me the tools to look at from different angles and figure out why it's bothered me for so long when I didn't always have the words to talk about why. Should I just jump into it or?
Yeah, let's get straight to it.
So Hollywood has a very strange relationship with female villains. Male villains tend to be ugly, unattractive.
Yes.
You know, in a very, very strong contrast to the fuckable male lead.
I mean,
okay, I mean, Pedro Pascal, but, you know, there's been a couple.
I'm thinking like maybe like Gaston from Beauty and the Beast, he was okay. I want to say Massimo from 365 Days, even though he wasn't officially a villain, but he was a villain to me. Like, he was more than okay, so, but I see what you mean. I get your overall point. Just wanted to caveat that.
Yeah, I mean, not 100%, but if you're thinking, you know, they're in the back room where they're doing their casting and they're like, let's get the baddest bad guy. They're not like, oh, you know, let's get someone that's really good looking. You know, they're like, let's get someone that makes your skin crawl.
Yes, true.
Whereas if you look at, you know, children's movies and there's the evil, you know, old lady and like Gremlins or whatever, they just don't look at like that. Like, they are attractive women being given evil lines.
Well, they start off, I'm thinking of like Snow White, for example. She'll start off like the evil queen. She started off as a very attractive like woman, and then they just like made her ugly and old.
Right. That's a perfect example of like, here is, you know, what looks like an ideal woman. And no, but no, she's evil. And that is very characteristic. Female villains tend to be successful, attractive women, you know, well-dressed, well-groomed, assertive, you know, the whole girl boss thing. And, you know, would otherwise be an aspirational figure. And this is being held up as a villain. And this has been starting to be reclaimed recently, like, you know, especially Ursula, especially in the gay community, is being reclaimed as, you know, as a downtrodden character and not just a straight villain. And I think they did that with the witch from The Wizard of Oz and Maleficent. But that just, I think, just reinforces the idea that there's this long period of history in film where the female villainesses are strikingly attractive and successful. And then they are used to present an example of what could have been a good woman if they'd had different priorities, you know, family, taking care of a man, you know, their art projects, their career, their cats. And so these women are being held up as an example of how a good woman can go wrong and what not to be. Don't prioritize yourself. Don't take time pleasing yourself with fashion and makeup. You know, reprioritize, make it all about the man. And I don't know why there's such a thing about the cats, but you know, enjoy your cats. What is it up with the familiars?
I think that's where the script got the insults from. Enjoy your cats.
You know, yeah, I would like to enjoy my cats. You know, why is it? Yeah, basically taking all these things that women enjoy and enjoy that don't involve a man, and then throwing them back into your face like, oh, you know, you're too perfect. Or even on TikTok lately, there's this trend of approachable makeup versus unapproachable makeup. The approachable makeup always, to me, looks infantilizing.
What? Oh, gosh.
It looks less self-possessed. It's always that, you know, very childish and the overwhelmed baby ingenue kind of look. And I don't think that's something that grown women should aspire to, even if they go for the cute aesthetic. I used to wonder why men hit on me slightly more when I was younger looking. And for a while, I thought maybe it's because they find that more attractive. But nowadays, I believe that men find vulnerability attractive. And they're looking for an easier target. And anyway, many possible, you know, side quests in this discussion. But I do feel like Hollywood has consistently, and not subtly, put forth this proposition that independent, successful women are the enemy. And, you know, this is one of the ways that people are indoctrinated into this patriarchal life plan of when you grow up, you don't look after your own interests. When you grow up, you look after a man's interests.
100%.
Yeah, really needs to be examined. And not just because women tend to be primary caretakers, because we grew up with this media. And so it's been whispered in our ears so many times. Sometimes we forget that it's not something that we came to understand through natural means, but it's something that we've been deliberately taught over and over. And we will need to unteach ourselves if we are to act in our best interests. That sounds a bit grim, doesn't it?
I do think, like, when I started really taking an FDS and applying the lessons and, you know, thinking about, you know, feminism more broadly as well, like radical feminism as well, when I think it was Andrea Dworkin who said that, you know, when you understand misogyny or something along those lines, that when you understand, you know, misogyny, you can't unsee it anywhere you go, and you sort of have this awakening, and you do see how, you know, mediums such as films especially, you know, they push such bullshit patriarchal narratives, you know, like you said, that the villainess who is really beautiful, oftentimes as you get older, you find yourself sympathizing with the villainess a bit more. Now, I don't know what that says about me.
Oh, definitely.
I don't know what that says about me as I become more jaded throughout life. Or if you actually sit back and think, actually, she has a point. You know, the quote that comes to mind is Cruella de Vil in 101 Dalmatians, that she made an absolute zinger of a quote when she said that, you know, more women have been lost to marriage than like war, famine and disease. And she's absolutely right. But obviously they had to portray her, you know, in that villain context in order for that quote to actually fly, and, you know, for people to sort of dismiss what she's saying as, you know, being out of hand or she's being a bitch or whatever. But she's absolutely right about that. And I think that's probably one of, like, many examples where, you know, if a woman sets a standard, I'm thinking about the Parent Trap, for example. I mean, looking back, she was basically trying to get the dad to control his daughters, right? I mean, not control, but to keep them in line and to get them to behave and, you know, to basically set a behavioural standard to some degree. And she was just, again, portrayed as, like, the ditzy evil stepmom, even though the situation that she was walking into, like, being a step-parent, especially as a mum, is really difficult. And the expectations, especially for stepmothers, is a lot higher than for stepfathers. Just go and browse the step-parent subreddit, if you don't believe me, and you'll see that 99.999% of the horror stories are from women who are expected, you know, to basically step into this really, really difficult role that often comes with really complex family dynamics. But obviously, when you're a child, you don't really understand misogyny and feminism and that, so you just see this stepmom as the evil stepmother. But looking back when I watched it again, and I thought, actually, she was given a raw deal. Also, not to mention the fact that, you know, her husband was still pining for his ex-wife.
Yeah, and another one that I really, you know, look up to is in The Devil Wears Prada, the Glenn Close character. You know, very successful, very clear boundaries, very clear standards, never raises her voice, and yet has absolute authority over everyone. So if this was a male character, this would be 100% recognized as an aspirational character. But because it's a woman, these things are all portrayed as negatives. And, you know, like, women don't have enough problems in the workforce already without being told that having normal boundaries, having very clear expectations, and not wasting time in arguments or pissing contests, being told that that is the absolute worst kind of woman to be, is super detrimental. And of course, these characters often get their comeuppance, and it always has to be in a weird kind of sexual way. Yeah, you know, whether it's the pie in the face or the falling down and their skirt goes up, you know, it's always a little unnecessary and not a way that male villains get treated. They not only have to have a comeuppance, they have to have a sexually demeaning comeuppance, which is totally par for the level of sexual degradation that Hollywood likes to impose on beautiful female characters. You know, even, I guess they're not quite villains, but like a low-level villain, like a horror movie, slasher movie, you've got the beautiful, obnoxious sorority girls, and then they just get killed in, you know, the dumbest ways imaginable. But it's so sexually charged. And, you know, if they get raped, it's just so gratuitous. It's something that I call, because I also work in film, like, they make the rape scenes wankable. There's no other way to view it, is that these scenes are designed not to be upsetting and create empathy and unity against evil. These scenes are designed so that a guy can have the vicarious ultimate power trip, you know, with his dick in his hand.
If you look at the very concept of, you know, even terms, I absolutely despise this term, but even terms like hate fucking, for example, you see that present in things like Hollywood. And like, I remember reading that in like Kill Bill, I think it was Uma Thurman's character. There's a scene in like one of the films, I can't remember which exactly, but she's basically being strangled by a male character. And what I found really quite disturbing was that it was Quentin Tarantino's hand that was strangling her during that.
I have issues with that man. Yeah. Yeah, he has a very obvious fetish for seeing the worst things happen to beautiful women.
Yeah, and it's almost like bizarre, but not surprising, acceptable it is, and like normalized it is, like basically sexual violence against women. Even things like Game of Thrones, for example, like the rape scenes in that was just awful.
Right. And it's doing is it's setting expectations for generations of men on how a power dynamic should be and what standards they can be enforcing upon women, even though the only reason for these standards is their own personal sexual gratification and not like making the world a better place.
I know we've spoken about pretty privilege. There's been a lot of discussions around pretty privilege that we've had here at FDS and in the wider, you know, like Twitterverse, as I like to call it. But one of the key differences between pretty privilege in quotation marks between like men and women is that if a woman is deemed to be conventionally attractive or deemed to be conventionally beautiful, then it almost seems like people are looking for a way to detract from that beauty. So they'll say, but she's stupid, she's promiscuous, she's evil, you know, she's a villain. They'll pick her apart for something, right? But when you see a conventionally attractive man, you don't automatically think, oh, like he's a bad person or he's stupid or he like shagged his way, you know, throughout his career. And that is almost like where the pretty privilege for women, it becomes a burden, because it's almost like women, you know, can't be deemed to be conventionally attractive or successful without somebody trying to detract from her in some kind of way. And, you know, that sort of, you know, level of detraction and attack, it doesn't happen when men are deemed to be conventionally attractive.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you mentioned you work in the film industry, Cassandra. Are there any other sort of, I guess, scrote observations that you have in that industry? I'm sure there's many, but...
Oh my gosh.
We've got enough time. We've got time today.
Okay. Well, you know, if you've been catching wind of the whole intimacy coordinator discussion...
Yeah, tell me about that. Tell me about that.
Oh my God. I guess it's not shocking that they're not ashamed to say this publicly, but guys who are like saying, oh, you don't have to worry about, you know, that guy in our friend group who's a known rapist. He's never tried to rape me. And all these guys are like, yeah, I'm not in the, you know, category of people that are typically, you know, victimized on set. So I don't have a problem with it keeping on. You know, that's great. In fact, I liked to do the victimizing myself. So please don't hire someone to stop me. I'm like, really? Did you just say that out loud? So that's been an awesome thing going on to, you know, have to repeatedly have those conversations.
I mean, what is the role of intimacy coordinator? Because this is the first time I'm hearing of it.
Okay. So it's pretty broad and it's something that we're all learning about because it's newer on the scene. So it's half like HR. So it's not just for love scenes or sex scenes, you know, it's also for any situation where people feel vulnerable. You know, they're being yelled at, they're being hit, they're being tied up in a coffin because they're working for Quentin Tarantino or being strangled by Quentin Tarantino. But you need somebody to go to who isn't the person signing your paycheck and be able to say, like, you know, I need boundaries. So sometimes they can be helping people figure out the vocabulary to do a sex scene without it getting too weird. Or there's things where, you know, if you are acting out a panic attack, you know, doing the things, breathing the same way, you can physiologically induce a panic attack. And now you're super vulnerable while you're also on the clock, you know, with 20 people around you, you know, waiting for you to do the next take. But you're not in a great position to advocate for yourself. And also when you're in a love scene, you're not in a great position to advocate for yourself. If you have a problem, you're holding up everybody on set's day, and you might want to think to yourself, well, I'll just let this guy hump my leg for 5 minutes and get it over with, and then get re-traumatized every time that you get hired for this kind of scene. Or you could have someone help set some ground rules, help set down some, you know, appropriate vocabulary for talking about this, and someone that you can talk to that can't fire you.
I mean, I am glad that they exist, but at the same time, it's also quite sad that they've had to introduce them almost, because Hollywood has had such a problem with respecting, you know, the boundaries of actors, especially actresses as well, especially women.
Well, and that's deliberate. A lot of guys get into acting because they're losers and they're like, oh, I'll finally get to kiss a girl. Maybe I'll even get to touch a girl, and they can't stop me because it's in the script, you know?
Is that why guys do it? Really? Oh my God.
And I've heard that more than once from low-level actors who aren't good-looking enough or talented enough or charming enough to become lead men. But I have heard that more than once on set from extras. And then, you know, you get on a music video shoot where you got the girls dancing sexy and they're like, woohoo, this is our chance to grab a handful of something. And you end up feeling very unsafe because...
Oh my gosh.
The film industry is very, very hostile to women in all kinds of ways, including the hours that are worked. Often you don't know when you're getting cut, and it's just not a career that someone who is a primary caretaker of children can sustain in most cases. And so what that means is that sets are total sausage fests.
Of course, yeah.
And so you're surrounded by a bunch of men. And if it's a music video set, they're probably drunk men. And you have to decide, do you grit your teeth and get it over with? Or do you not get paid for this day?
And these shoots can go on for days or months sometimes.
Right. And this is not a situation that people should have to go through any longer. I've been in that situation, and I try to run my sets in a way that nobody has to be in the situations that I was in. But there's a lot of shitty and unsafe situations you can find yourself in.
And just off the back of that then, what are some of the ways in which you run your set to create that safe environment for women?
Well, having female crew helps. Having an intimacy coordinator is a huge help because everybody's so busy. They've got their own roles. And, you know, if I'm doing 20 different things and trying to keep to a timeline so we don't go over a budget, you know, some extra is going to feel uncomfortable walking up and saying, like, excuse me, let me disturb you and disrupt your workflow, but someone's out of hand. And so having an intimacy coordinator always there means that there's always someone to talk to that they feel safe talking to. Honestly, asking people if they're okay with things before you do them. Asking everyone, like, you know, are you okay being touched here? Are you okay if we do this? You know, simple, basic consent things that you do to normal human beings. Just because we're working and have a script doesn't mean we can't treat each other like decent human beings. And for a long time, you know, male directors, male actors, whatever, have been using this, like, you know, oh, you know, we're making a movie as an excuse to touch whatever they feel like and to treat people like shit.
And even offset as well. I remember reading that Jamie Dornan, he was recently complaining about being stalked, and I didn't have an ounce of sympathy for him because he said a few years ago, just quite casually, that when he was preparing for a role, he stalked a woman because he basically followed a woman home because the role he was preparing for was, he was basically playing the role of a stalker. And I just think, in like, it's almost like when they use the method acting.
You could have just read a book, dude.
You could have just read a book. You could have, I don't know.
Yeah, don't work with method actors.
Is that the number one advice?
Don't work with method actors ever. And don't hire people that take liberties and ruthlessly fire people who do. We had to fire multiple people in the last production, and we had to ask every single person, you know, are you okay with this person? Just like read down a whole list of names. Do you have any issues, any safety issues? And just read down the whole list for every single person on set. And it didn't take that long to do that. But, you know, if you look at these people that are hired over and over again, Kevin Spacey, I'm trying to think who was a danger to women, but I'm sure I'll think of a dozen after we're done with this. But nobody is so talented that you can overlook the fact that they are a groper, rapist, harasser, stalker, whatever. Nobody's that talented. There are millions of talented people out there. There are millions of good-looking people out there. You never need to work with the abuser, ever. Nobody's that famous and that talented that there's not someone exactly like him, except not abusive. That was something that really bothered me because, like, last time I was firing someone was, like, kind of right after the Kevin Spacey thing. And I was like, I know there's money involved and there's a timeline involved and there's a lot of people involved. But this conversation that I just had with someone that, like, hey, we cannot have the liability on set that is you.
You're the liability. Yes.
Somebody could have had that conversation with Kevin Spacey, like, you know, I know you're famous and talented and all that, but we cannot have the liability on set that is you. Sorry. Like, that easy.
I mean, I've not been involved in the film industry, but when I think, like, Hollywood, when they think of a liability, you know, they're not really thinking a rapist or a pedophile is a liability unless it's like an army, like, what's that guy called who's into BDSM? Army Hammer, I want to say.
Army Hammer.
Unless that was like some epic shit show, like, scandal.
Because ultimately it doesn't affect men as much as it affects women.
Exactly. That was my roundabout way of saying that. And if they were to get rid of every predator, every male predator in Hollywood, there would probably be nobody left.
Well, there would be a lot of job openings for talented looking people that know how to ask before they put their hand on your leg. And that sounds like a great thing to me. you know, this was a while ago, but there was a Japanese cannibal who killed an exchange student in Paris and filmed himself eating her, and it was super gross. And through kind of a loophole in the extradition things, he ended up back in Japan as a free man. And he got hired by porn companies to do a particular kind of degradation porn where he would fuck these women. And then as soon as they were done fucking, they'd be like, oh, hey, you remember those headlines about that guy that killed a girl and ate her? He was just inside you.
No.
And there were enough people paying for this to create a demand. And so same thing with these other workplaces. You're putting people in vulnerable positions with known predators and kind of getting off on it. Because otherwise, why would you do it? Why would it not make your skin crawl if you didn't enjoy it?
I don't mean to sound conservative and prudish, but a lot of the sex scenes in recent like Hollywood films that I've watched, and I'm not really a massive film watcher anymore. I guess FDS is just ruined.
It does, doesn't it? It really does.
A lot of media for me, I just don't. And also, I just don't want to put money in like Hollywood's pocket if I can help it. Like, I rarely go to the cinema anymore. I went to see the latest Aquaman film purely to support Amber Heard, who was amazing in it, by the way. But yeah, I just feel like a lot of these sex scenes are just really, really graphic for no benefit. I mean, you know, I'm all for a good sex scene, but I think, you know, whether it's either written or in film, it needs to actually add substance to the actual plot. And that's when I think it's more powerful. But a lot of sex scenes are just, I'm like, skip, 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 skip.
Well, yes. And they're just so improbable and, you know, anatomically inaccurate.
Yeah.
And written by guys who watch porn and don't realize how women enjoy sex. You know, you're watching this thing and you're like, yeah, you know, that would not be enjoyable at all. Like, I feel like I have pretty standard anatomy and like, no. And then it creates this whole, you know, feedback loop where things get increasingly detached from real life, and not just in porn, but in regular movies.
Right, exactly. And then especially, you know, before you know it, you literally have basically porn on Netflix, 365 D&I.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's basically porn on Netflix, basically. Yeah. But just circling back for as we approach the final part of this episode. So, you know, you mentioned like anti-heroes and villainesses.
I think that until we get some really solid female heroes, it's okay to take your inspiration from the bad guy who is a woman. Because there isn't a lot of aspirational characters in cinema or TV shows, you know, because they always have to make the good one like quirky and incompetent in some way.
Or they have to make the good one like a doormat. Like, if she's beautiful and a nice person, she's either abused, like, you know, Belle and Beating the Beast. Like, I have a lot of respect for Belle. She was clearly a very intelligent woman, but she was abused by a literal beast. Or, you know, like you said, they have to make her ditzy, or they have to make her, you know, basically less than a well-rounded, accomplished woman, right?
And sometimes, you know, it seems like the form of degradation is having them get with a guy that is just so underqualified, like any Jack Black movie, and then, you know, whatever supermodel of the moment they pay, you know, pair them with. It's like, why? Or
Gwyneth Paltrow and is it Jack Black in Shallow Hal?
I'm trying to remember. I know that movie. Yeah. Or any movie with like the guys that made The 40-Year-Old Virgin or Knocked Up. Like, those movies just have me screaming, like, why? Why? This woman has a career. This woman is put together, and you're living, you know, in a garage being high all day. Like, there's no way that a woman of this caliber, okay, you know, I've made my mistakes too, but you know, but it's not realistic or aspirational. The guy might be like, oh yeah, I can be a slob and pull that, you know, this movie, you know, is my dream come true. It's not for any of the women watching it. That's a nightmare.
That's true. I guess Hollywood, like many things, seems to be made for men. So how can we make it more for women as well? I mean, I've got a few ideas, but I'd like to hear from you what you think as somebody who is closer to that world than I am.
Well, to be clear, I mean,
more female-centered and more FDS.
I'm like kind of on the indie level. I'm not like, you know, I'm not working for companies that make Marvel movies or anything like that. much smaller.
I mean, but the independent film scene is also a powerful medium as well, especially seeing as, you know, with Hollywood, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, but recently I think everybody is really over the superhero epic era at the moment. You know, when you go to the cinema and you're there for 3 hours, it's just everyone's over it now. Like, you know, all the superheroes have been clapped out to death. So, you know, the independent, you know, film sector is also a powerful medium. I think that could potentially be a way in which, you know, female characters can be almost, you know, not repositioned, but they can be portrayed differently and, you know, portrayed as well-rounded, you know, human beings, not necessarily this sort of, you know, dichotomous, you know, she's either a villain who's a bitch or she is like a meek housewife who is the perfect woman in quotation marks.
Well, I think we don't need any more movies where the female characters are tropes. Our real characters, the women should be too. And so whether that's not buying scripts about women that were written by men who've never talked to a woman, or having someone read the script and actually listening to the feedback. You know, this is not tracking as a real woman. A real woman wouldn't do this. A real woman wouldn't say that. Gosh, I'm starting to sound like myself when I'm watching the Fast and Furious movies with my kids. And I'm like, I don't know if a bunch of incels wrote these scripts, but...
Probably did. They probably did.
Yeah.
I mean, who writes 10 films about fast cars apart from an incel?
Right. I mean, I have a lot of problems with the Fast and Furious movies. You know, great action scenes, but like, oh yeah, daddy, you know, if you win, I'll fuck you because your car's really fast. I really don't know anyone like that. I don't find that realistic. And, you know, if there's furniture women in the script, that's what I call the beautiful women that are always like draped on the back of a chair while the gangster is having his meeting, or, you know, they're just around, but they could be a lamp or something, just furniture women. And then, you know, because I'm Asian, you know, I've got a lot of gripes with the way that Asian women are portrayed on screen also.
I think generally women, the way like non-Western women are portrayed in Hollywood is also deeply problematic. But I think that's a episode for another day, because I could go off about that.
That definitely ditto. But, you know, I think it comes down to if the writer cannot write female characters, it's time to get a new writer. I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, and I think, you know, also, like, where possible, supporting, you know, female-led films, female directors as well, can shift the narrative. And I think also, just generally, I feel like there has been a massive cultural shift over the past 3-4 years. It's wild that 2020 is now 4 years ago.
Oh my God.
I still think it was, like, 2 years ago. But, you know, within the broader dating scene, I feel like there's been a bigger cultural shift, especially amongst women. You know, where we are almost drowning out the noise from like men who are trying to keep us in this sort of box and trying to do this sort of like dichotomous. You can either be the bitchy boss lady, like, you know, the meek submissive housewife. And women are saying no to that. Like, we can have our money. We can still want a guy who treats us well. We can, you know, set our standards. We can still be all of these things. And, you know, we don't care that, you know, if like you believe that we're the villain. Ultimately as well. So I hope to see more of that. And as they say, I think that art imitates life. So it'll be interesting to see, like, I guess if the cultural shift continues, if that will reflect in films. I mean, we saw a taste of that with the Barbie film. Now, I still haven't seen Barbie because I'm not really about like hype and hysteria, but I will watch it when I go on holiday in a couple of weeks because it's in the in-flight entertainment. So I'll catch it then. And I've heard mixed reviews about Barbie. I haven't actually seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yet either. I'm waiting for it to be free on Netflix.
Yeah, same. I simply feel like paying for it.
I don't want to pay for it either.
I mean, I've literally just said, like, support female directors, but I found it difficult to cut through all the hype and the noise. I thought when it dies down, I can watch it with a clear mind. So I will do that.
Yeah. The other thing I think really needs to change is this view that women are a niche market. We're literally 51% of the population.
That's so true. That's so true.
In many cases, we earn more.
Yes.
And, you know, do more things that aren't playing video games in a basement. So I would argue we're a bigger market and we're a more active market. And we are not a minority. Literally, we're not a minority.
No, that's so true.
Because one of my favorite subreddits, What Could Go Wrong, and it's mostly like guys crashing their motorcycle in stupid ways. We live longer. We're a better market. We're actually going to be around to spend more money. And, you know, once you get past a certain age bracket, like there are more women because we didn't crash our motorcycle or try to hang off a ladder off that ledge. You know, we live longer.
And it's interesting you actually mentioned that because, like, first, I hadn't really thought of that. Like, it's so easy to think of, like, women as some sort of minority group because of the way we're treated, but we're actually not. And as a result, we have a lot of power. Hence, the things like the feminism and the cultural shift, you know, now you're seeing, you know, men writing think pieces about why dating is now unfair. And that that is because that women, you know, we're a powerful force and, you know, hopefully we can enact change from our side as well. But I remember speaking to a marketer and he was always saying that, you know, women make the best, you know, storytellers and marketers because they have empathy, whereas men don't. And, you know, women can put themselves in the position of the person who is buying the product or viewing or watching the film, and they can write from their perspective. And that is why they tend to do better in fields, you know, such as marketing or, you know, storytelling or script writing, for example. Like a lot of extremely good scripts are either co-written or written by women.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of the famous script doctors are women, like Carrie Fisher was a script doctor.
Philippa Boyens did the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And you can see the difference in how, you know, women, you know, were portrayed in film versus other films where it's just been a sausage fest all over the script.
So speaking of women having greater levels of empathy, I mean, I think that really ties in with men and women thinking that, you know, what's fair is different. And when we say, oh, you know, like we like raped and murdered and stalked, you know, a little less, like maybe around the same amount that you guys are. And then men say that's unfair. Well, the other option for fairness is that they get raped and murdered as much as we do. So, I mean, is that the kind of fairness they're looking for? And I just misunderstood. Or they just don't want to give anything.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I'm just generally just hoping that in terms of like the way the villainesses are portrayed, I'm just hoping that we begin to see more, I guess, like feminism and like radical feminism in some of these female characters as well. I mean, they had it with Cruella to some degree, basically lambasting marriage and kids, but they just did it from the wrong angle, like the angle that she was just, you know, like a bit of dog hater.
Well, hopefully it's baby steps. They've introduced the concepts out of the wrong mouth, and then hopefully later we can progress to the point where the good characters are saying these things, and it's not shocking, because it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be shocking to acknowledge these things, and it shouldn't take somebody that's on the fringe, and you know, on the fringe to the point that they're the villain of the movie, to be able to say these things in film.
No, it shouldn't. Keep watching and just hoping that Hollywood and just gets its act together. But I mean, you know, these themes are also present in other like film industries as well, such as Bollywood, such as Nollywood as well, which is the African market, the African version of Hollywood. These sorts of themes are also present. You know, you watch a film when you're a child and, you know, the woman is deemed, you know, to be an evil anti-hero / villain / gold digger. As women get older, you actually turn around and think, actually, she was right. So
I know, you know, that's one of the things about representation. You shouldn't have to wait till we're older and wiser to realize that these are people we can look up to. There should be characters, a spectrum of characters, especially including aspirational ones, and aspirational ones truly aspirational, that like, yes, this is who I want to be when I grow up, not this is who the man wants me to grow up so he can fuck. Aspirational on our end, not theirs.
Agreed. And, you know, as the final point from me, I also think that accepting and, you know, looking at female characters differently, it might also involve giving, you know, sometimes like women the benefit of the doubt. I've often found, and I'm guilty of this myself, in that we judge women a lot more harshly than we judge men, even as women. So sometimes just giving them a bit of the benefit of the doubt and understanding the complexities of the situation that they're in.
Is there a particular scenario you're thinking of?
Oh, that's a good question. I keep going back to, I mean, I would probably, you know, like an example I would think of was the one I used towards the top of the episode, like the parent trap with the stepmom. I'm not saying that she was perfect. I think sometimes she was a bit out there, but at the same time, it wasn't really appreciated, the fact that being a step parent and trying to come into a blended family was really difficult. And again, like the fact that her husband was openly pining for his ex-wife, like quite obviously too, which, you know, looking today, you know, we would just say he's a scroat, for example, but it was almost like she was getting in the way of his potential relationship with his ex-wife. But at the same time, he was the one who chose to bring another woman. So yeah, so that's one thing I would say.
Yeah, so they're definitely blaming him for a situation he put himself in. And that's not entirely fair.
Yeah, and you know, she was painted as the villain, even though it's a difficult situation to walk into. But obviously you don't understand the nuance of that when you're watching something as a comedy and, you know, film just has to position somebody as the villain or the anti-hero.
All right. Well, is there anyone that you would consider your evil inspiration?
Yeah, let us know. I'd also probably say, for me, she's not in film, but she should be, hopefully one day. Or maybe she is in film, but I haven't seen it yet. Catherine the Great of Russia.
Oh.
I know some people have been asking for an episode, historical scrotes episode on that, which I will get around to, because I don't normally go that far back in history. Like, if it's earlier than 1850 or so, I just can't imagine life that far back. So I just sort of just skip it. But I did look up Catherine the Great, and she was special.
Yeah, she was unabashed about a bunch of things. Very unabashed. And people think it's, you know, shocking when Madonna's running around with her little boy toys. But like Catherine the Great's like, you know, I got you beat.
Yeah, Catherine the Great was, so that'll be an episode coming to the podcast soon. But yeah, let us know who your favourite female anti-heroes and villainesses are in the comments. It'll be interesting to have that discussion. But yes, thank you so much, Cassandra, for joining me on this episode. I really enjoyed discussing and dissecting this topic as well, because again, I also think it's really good to watch any form of media with a critical lens as well. So hopefully this episode has brought some of that to Hollywood, or maybe ruined it even more for you, like it has for me.
Aww. Oops. Well, thank you for having me. You know, there's plenty of more things to ruin if you ever want to talk again. Plenty of things.
Hopefully. So that's our show. Check us out on Twitter at fem.strat. We are making a slow return to Twitter/X. I think ever since that, the muskrat has taken over. It's sort of, yeah, it's just the experience has gone absolutely rapidly, like downhill faster than Dilly. So, but yeah, we are around on X, and we're also on our personal accounts as well. Well, I'm still tweeting and trying to stir stuff on my personal account as well, at Savannah_FDS. You can also join our Patreon. We have 2 currently going as well. And thanks for listening, Queens, and for all you scroots out there.
Eat it and like it.
And I'm Ed. See you next week.